Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader and hosts a show on WCPT Radio, 820 AM, and he's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, David. And Dave's been a guest on that show.
With pleasure, too.
Yeah.
Well, today I'd like to talk about primary elections, because we're in the midst of statewide primary elections, and I'd like to get your thoughts on things like voting, citizen participation, and election reporting. But I'm not going to ask you who you're voting for.
Oh, okay. Everybody else is. I get every day, I get people asking me, and I'm all over the map, as I always say.
Well, you know, when I walk around these days, because the final day for voting is coming up upon us, and when we're recording this, we already have early voting going on. And when I'm just encountering friends and strangers these days, I ask about candidates they prefer. And for the most part, Ben, I get people who like, so who, like, who's running? Like, I'm getting, like, mostly, you know, clueless.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm utterly obsessed with this thing, but some people don't share my obsession.
You and I, of course, are steeped in it, given our vocations. This is one of the things that I wonder about, is the average citizen, where should we expect them to get their information from? He's shaking his head, folks.
I don't know. This is really a difficult question to answer because I think about this all the time. People will say something to me just on an ordinary basis that will expose some staggering ignorance of how our system works. Now, I'm ignorant about a lot of things that people really know well, like, for instance, popular music. I'm so ignorant of it. People will laugh at me. You don't know this, or the latest app for a phone, or, you know, a lot of things that people can't believe. So I understand the notion of being completely ignorant about what everybody else knows. But I would argue that not knowing what the latest pop hit is less significant than not knowing, for instance, as someone did once, that Joe Biden was not Barack Obama's running mate. We were watching a speech, and Joe Biden was giving a speech, and this person said, is this the gentleman that is running against President Obama? And that's some staggering ignorance right there.
And that's at the presidential level, which usually commands more attention than offices below it.
Just in case there are some listeners who don't understand, Joe Biden was the vice president for Barack Obama. So anyway, the level of ignorance out there is staggering. And I don't know how to combat it.
Well, let's come at it from the other direction. Where do you get your information about candidates from? Granted, you're sort of in a hyper-real situation because you're interviewing candidates all the time as a journalist. But outside of that, where do you get information about candidates from?
I'm old school, as you know. I still read newspapers, so I get three newspapers daily, the New York Times, the Sun Times, and the Tribune. So those are my primary sources. And now in the age of the internet, I get the Washington Post. So I read the Washington Post.
You're talking about online.
Yeah, online, the political coverage. And then occasionally I'll get, my God, don't let this get around. I'll get information through something I'll see on Facebook. Somebody will post something on Facebook. And I have this knee-jerk reaction because I'm old that I don't trust anything that's on Facebook, even if it's like there's a link. So what I'll do is I'll look up the name that they allude to, and then I'll do my own Google search for it and find what I consider a legitimate news source, and then I'll read the article. I know that's old school, but that's how I do it.
So you're getting clues from Facebook without being a victim of Facebook's algorithms.
Right.
They're pumping information at you.
I am, to a sense, a victim of the algorithms, because the fact that I see the thing in the first place is an indication that the algorithm has put that there. So that's how I, for instance, I think I found out. No, this is not true. I was going to say Richard Ojeda, who I'm really interested in. He's a state senator in West Virginia who's running for Congress. He was a Trump supporter, voted for Trump in 2016, and now he sounds like the second coming of you and me. He's a really progressive Democrat. He was one of the leading supporters of the teachers when they wanted to strike. I'm fascinated by him now. I discovered him. His name was mentioned in an article that the New York Times wrote about the striking teachers. And then I did my own research and I've learned more about him. So, you know, that's generally how I operate.
Are you aware of where people around you get their information from? That is, people who you feel are somewhat informed.
Yeah, it's funny you should say this is actually one of my favorite topics. I could tell when talking to somebody where they get their information. For instance, there's the NPR crowd, National Public Radio. Boom, I know right away.
How do you know? Say for NPR.
Well, for BEZ here in Chicago, it's like a one hand this, a one hand that, the other hand kind of crowd. That's really the Tribune, by the way. But they're very similar. People who get their information from the Tribune and people who get their information from NPR, you know, it's like a very, I don't want to offend NPR because it's really like, you know, a lot of the people that were for NPR.
So in other words, it's not a straight up position. It's different perspectives that they're regurgitating.
It's sort of like, it's a very privileged, perfect. Well, Ben, you know, there is this point that they make. You know, it's like reading a column in the Tribune. They have a point. Like, the system is so illegitimate. People are getting screwed left and right. But they have a point. I'm in WBZ.
So false balance?
Yeah, man, that's a good way of putting it. False balance.
It's not like, my term. It's been around for a while.
Chomsky? Sounds like something Chomsky would say. Or Amy Goodman, your favorite.
Well-known in journalism.
But false equivalency is the other one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Say, for example, around climate change, people say there's two sides. There's the 98% of scientists who say that climate change is a
I think it's more like 99%, okay? You cut them down a percentage point.
And then if there's only 1% of scientists who claim that there's, you know...
No, but no self-respecting BEZ listener would articulate. Their false balance would be like... Like, I was obsessed for years. I mean, how many more black people get arrested for smoking reefer than white people? So, like, well, Ben, there's studies show that there's different ways that black people and white people smoke reefer. I'm like, what study? Where? Who? Huh? That's more like, I could just tell, oh, you get your news. Okay.
All right. Interesting.
But you know what? I'm going to say this. That NPR, those people are really informed when it comes to national news, you know what I mean? And international news. You could tell, oh, you're a smart person because they cover a lot of territory. So listening to NPR is sort of like reading the New York Times.
But what about the people who you know who are informed about local stuff? Where are they getting their information from? Or is that a vanishingly small group of people?
Yeah, you're talking about a very select group. Some of the people are just like in the know. They're talking constantly all the time. It varies. I mean, it depends who I'm talking to. You could almost do it like a racial variance. If I'm talking to an ordinary white Chicagoan, I could tell the Tribune reader, ordinary black Chicagoan, my beloved bright one. Sun-Times reader. They see stuff in the Sun-Times, and the Sun-Times and the Tribune, you know, they play different stories differently. You could sort of tell. And then there's the junkies who, like, listen to talk radio, and sometimes you got to listen to VON talk radio, and there's some who listen to my radio station, and DNA is gone, but a lot of people would get their local news from DNA.
You know about the DNA Info veterans. They're resurrecting that local news outlet. They're calling it Block Club Chicago.
We had Jen Sabell on the radio on our show talking about that. So that's really cool. I thought they did a valuable service just providing straight up news. And I told this to Jen when she was on. In the old days, God, I'm really showing my age, but there were local newspapers in the city itself, but then there were suburban newspapers, so you could follow what was going on in a town, like the Evans Review, the Wilmette Life, or whatever they were called, Pioneer Press papers that went all the way up to Wisconsin. Yeah, I think it's really great that they do that. But in local news, I guess, you know, the Tribune, Sun-Times, BEZ are sort of the big three, in my humble opinion. It's just where most of the people I talk to get their information.
I want to think about selecting candidates, given that someone has gone through the trouble of trying to learn about candidates. In this particular election, what sort of criteria should people have? Just to step back for a second to think about who's running or what offices are appearing in this election. We have federal all the way down to the county level, because we have, at the federal level, we have congressmen.
Duh, I didn't even think about it. I was like, federal? Yeah, you're right, congressmen.
Just go back to civics. The primary election is to choose the party's candidates that will run in the general election at the end of the year in November.
Mm-hmm.
But at the federal level, we have congresspeople. At the state level, we have the governor. We have the attorney general and state legislators, both in the House and the Senate side. And then at the county level, we have clerk, treasurer, assessor, and
county board commissioner.
County board commissioners, who we talked about not too long ago, and about 100 judicial candidates or something like that.
Mm, that's overwhelming, those judicial candidates.
Yeah. What criteria should people use to figure out who to vote for? I think of an office like attorney general, you would presume that they would have to be an attorney, but they don't.
No, that is true. They do not have. I had this very conversation with somebody just the other day. You do not have to be a lawyer to be the attorney general.
And I want to give a plug for a brand new podcast called Illinois. That's Illinois with an E on the end, by a colleague, Ellen Mayer. She's trying to explain government to people.
Good luck, Ellen.
Her first podcast was explaining the job of the attorney general.
Okay.
So everybody check that out.
Uh-huh.
She talked about, she and her interviewee talked about the statutory requirements for that office. For example, there's the public access counselor, which handles people's records requests or appeals for people's records requests when they get denied by their local government.
Yeah.
Arguably, under the current attorney general, Lisa Madigan. The Office of the Public Access Counselor has done pretty well by some measures. It's an office that required, the role of the Public Access Counselor is required by state law, but somebody in that job could slow walk that.
Yes.
That's an example of the kind of thing I'm thinking about when there are statutory requirements for an office that the office holder has a lot of leeway around what they could do with that.
Uh-huh.
The next one I'm thinking of is the county clerk. We have a similar situation as with the attorney general. The Cook County clerk, David Orr, is not running for re-election. And the current county recorder of deeds, Karen Yarborough, is running, I think, unopposed.
Because she knocked off the her opponent. It's always hard to lose when there's no challenger. We have no one running against you.
So if she gets one vote, she's going to get the...
She wins 1-0.
So presumably she'll vote for herself.
Yeah, so that's it.
Pretty
it's
guaranteed.
Democracy reigns.
So do you have any general thoughts about this issue when looking at candidates, trying to compare what they stand for themselves as opposed to what the office requires of them? You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Deciding who you're going to vote for in so many ways is such a subjective decision. I make fun of the voting habits of Chicagoans all the time, but I realize that I am as guilty as anyone of
being subjective,
very subjective. And you make fun of me all the time for my choices, and you ought to, because I've made some really questionable decisions down through the years for all kinds of reasons. But it's a very subjective reason. So many of the positions that you just noted, like Cook County Recorder of Deeds, which is being phased out, but Cook County Clerk, even to a certain degree, Attorney General, Cook County Assessor. Most people just don't know what they do, and most people don't know what these jobs, you know, the function of the jobs, and how the people who sit in those jobs can retard the progress of the state or the city or the county. So I can't blame the voters for not having a voluminous amount of information. I mean, it's just a lot of things you have to know, and life's complicated, and there's a lot of, you know, distractions, et cetera. So I cannot make fun of voters too much if they don't know, for instance, what the Cook County clerk does. That said, once you do know, then I can make fun of you for the reasons, the quirky reasons you vote for who you vote for. My greater objection is the way people vote in high-profile elections where they know the position, they know the candidates, they know the record. Even if they don't read newspapers on a regular basis or they don't listen to the radio on a regular basis, they have a general sense of what's going on, and they still vote the way they do.
For example?
Well, mayors. Since Harold Washington died, how many years is that now of mayoral elections where the voters of Chicago have constantly voted against
their best interest?
Their best interest. And they do it over and over again, and they repeat the same explanation, each one which just makes no sense. Like, you can't beat City Hall, so I'm going to vote for the mayor. Well, implicit in your explanation for why you voted is that you want to beat City Hall. So, of course, you can't beat City Hall if you don't vote against City Hall. So if you want to beat City Hall, why would you vote for the mayor? And then the other one, well, there was no one running against him. Well, in every single mayoral election,
there's an opponent.
There's a bit opponent. You just dismiss that opponent. Now, it may be that the opponent is worthy of being dismissed. At one point, I voted for Dorothy Brown in 2007 against Mayor Daley. All right? And in retrospect, maybe Daley would have been a better mayor than Dorothy Brown. I don't know. You could argue that point. Those last 4 years of Daley's reign were pretty turbulent, pretty schizophrenic. You know, he was for the Olympics. We was going to throw all the money in the world at the Olympics. And then all of a sudden we didn't get the Olympics and suddenly we're broke and there's no money for anything. And he's like this moody guy hiding out in City Hall and he quits. would we have been worse off with Dorothy Brown? I don't know.
Do you blame the news media at all for not informing those people that you're talking about, or you think they have blinders on?
Well, I'm not going to blame the news media. I mean, listen, it's a pretty jaded bunch, the news media. You know, if you report around town long enough, you get to be pretty jaded. I think that by and large, the reporters in Chicago do a good job of presenting what's going on. And either the public's not paying attention or they still make bad decisions. Now, there's reporters here and there, columnists here and there, and I'm like, man, what are you smoking?
Columnists, obviously, they're coming from a subjective, presenting a point of view. I mean, you do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing that I object to more is the nature of the reporting around elections by many media outlets, particularly broadcast, seems to be of the nature of sports reporting. Mm-hmm. So reporting on the race.
Yeah, that's true. We're all guilty of that.
Yeah, the tactics, the popularity of candidates, report on spectacular gaffes. For example, how much will that Blago tape hurt Pritzker, yeah, as opposed to how racist are the practices of Pritzker and the Democratic Party, as opposed to issues talking about the race? Try to gin up the spectacular, like how close are they now? How much money does that one have as opposed to that one? What's your perspective on that?
I hear you. And I'll give you an example that just immediately happened. Today when I woke up, the Tribunal, home delivered as always, had a front page story, their latest scoop on gubernatorial candidate J.B. Pritzker.
Just Bahamas Pritzker?
Yes. His offshore holdings that are obviously intended to shelter his income from taxes. And it was a very damning story, in my humble opinion.
It was in-depth, too.
Yeah, it was very in-depth. My hats are off. As much as I criticize the Tribune's editorial board, who are the wackiest bunch.
So in-depth reporting.
Yeah, real, legit reporting. So I've talked about it all day on my show. But before I did that, out of curiosity, this is kind of how I prepare. I called as many people as I could. It was a short day. I only got about 3 people, but I'm not giving names. Because when I call people, I'm not quoting you. I just want to know what you think. All right? Because it helps me. It helps me inform. And to a T, the first reaction every single one of them had was, it won't hurt him in the primary. In other words, the story had come out too late for Biss or Kennedy to get up opposing ads using it, so it won't hurt him in the primary. The first reaction was just what you're saying, the horse race. And they've been conditioned to think this way. My first reaction was, oh my God, this is scandalous. That this guy who is going to raise taxes on everybody and ask everybody to contribute their tax dollars to the larger good, and I believe he should, would himself be sheltering his own income to deprive the larger good of money he should be paying it. I mean, don't you see an inconsistency there? How can Democrats ask people to pay more in taxes when the guy asking them to pay more in taxes is bending over backwards to shelter his income by sending it to the Cayman Islands?
And are the people you talk to, were they reporters?
Some were, yeah. I've talked about this a lot today, people on the air talking about this. It's a real problem for Democrats, and they don't quite know how to handle it because, yeah,
you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And then what they say is the obvious comeback is, well, Rauner did the same thing. And I'm like, I agree, but why would we be emulating Rauner,
right,
you know? But to answer the question you asked, it just shows you how reporters have been conditioned. They've been conditioned to think of things in terms of very practical, pragmatic concerns like, will this guy get elected? You know, like when Chewy ran in 2015, what's your plan? I remember that. What's your plan? All the reporters were bellowing at me. Mayor Rahm didn't have a plan. You and I talked about this so many times. He had no plan.
But he got a pass.
Yeah, he got a pass because he was the mayor. That's the other thing. Well, he's the mayor. You're the challenger. What's your plan?
The benefit of incumbency.
Yeah, it's also the benefit of the fact that Chewy represented it, like this left of center faction that establishment Chicago didn't trust, didn't want. And reporters, you know, they kind of sometimes speak, you know, they speak what they hear.
Going back to the horse race reporting, I'm wondering how much of a challenge that is for you, to avoid, because you've got this 15 hours a week of broadcast time that you have to fill up. So this is the first election that's taken place while you've had the radio show, right?
Yes, that would be true. Well, hold on, let me think. Well, the first local, yeah.
So you've had lots of candidates on. Have you been successful? Have you met your own standard in avoiding the sort of horse race reporting as opposed to diving into issues?
Well, when I have a candidate on, for instance, I've had a lot of attorney general candidates.
Well, there are, you know, 20 of them.
Yeah. Well, I haven't had any Republicans.
There's only two of them.
But I ask them generally the same questions. The only candidate I asked the path to victory question was Robert Marshall, who's running for governor, and he's the definition of a fringe candidate.
He's the three-state solution.
He's a three-state guy, right? And I find him a very interesting person. I would definitely have him back. He had some interesting ideas. So I said, how can you possibly win? You know, that kind of thing. But I generally stay away from the path to victory question when I have the candidates themselves on. Now, when I have other reporters on, and I have strategists on, and like Stacey Davis Gates on.
From the Chicago Teachers Union.
Yeah, from the Teachers Union. You know, Joanna Klonsky.
Joanna Klonsky is a
political consultant. You know, and people like that on, and journalists. We do that because I do believe there's some merit in that discussion. You got to win. So what's your path to victory? And this is something I'm really concerned about with Democrats in general. How can Democrats defeat Trumpism? Trumpism is a very potent force, obviously. The guy's president, but his rhetoric is pretty strong, and he speaks to a lot of frustrations that people have, and his tariffs speak to a lot of frustrations people have in manufacturing industry, people who've lost their jobs, et cetera, his steel tariffs. So I'm constantly wondering from people, like, how do you beat this? What's a convincing message to get out? And what kind of candidates are you looking for? So I'm always...
You're interrogating that.
Yeah, that's a constant theme on this show. And it's a theme in my writing at The Reader. I'm always looking at like a public policy proclamation, you know, like the mayor in particular, and pointing out that this is why the Democrats lost in Michigan, because if you don't stand for something, why should people vote for you? I do a lot of what you're talking about, like what you would call horse race stuff.
That leads me to think about the participation by your audience, by citizens in general, how they participate in democracy vis-a-vis voting versus doing anything else. And what I'm thinking about is that some feel that voting is one of the fundamental acts one should perform if you want to participate in democracy. But this emphasis, this mania, this, you know, this huge amount of resources and attention put on to the voting cycle, to the voting, quote, season, unquote, can compel, I think, people to believe that voting is really all they need to do. And when the election is over, they can, you know, they don't have to devote any other work or attention to democracy. And I remember that, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, we talked about this, and I invoked Professor Noam Chomsky, who in a speech talked about, in fact, let's listen to what he said.
Wow.
One more time.
Okay.
Because it's worth repeating, I think. He was asked about what citizens should do, and he was starting to name some of the things that people could be involved in. And then he said,
these are all things that can be done, but they are not going to be done by intermittent participation in something. They're going to be done by constant involvement. Which is, doesn't mean 100% of your time, but, you know, like you're always around. You're part of an organization. It's always doing something. You help when you can. You do the kinds of things that have to be done next. They may be small things, but they add up. That's what you can do. It's the way changes come in the past. It's the way significant changes have come in the recent past. And that's the way it'll go on. There's no other magic key that anybody knows. I mean, we're indoctrinated in the rich, privileged societies. You're kind of indoctrinated with the notion that you have to have instant gratification. Like, I went to a demonstration and nothing happened, so what can I do? Or I pushed a lever and every 4 years and nothing happened, so what can I do? That's not the way it works. I mean, it works by constant engagement, hard, constant, regular work, which builds up popular movements.
Man, Chomsky, I love listening to Chomsky. He has that rhythm when he talks. But he's absolutely right. And if you want an example, look to the right. Right now, there's a case coming that the Supreme Court will rule on called the Janus case, J-A-N-U-S. as name for the plaintiff, who
is a state worker
who is suing on the grounds, challenging his obligation to be a fee-paying member of a union on the grounds that that violates his First Amendment right not to have to join a group that he doesn't believe in or pay money to a group that he doesn't believe in.
The argument being that the union, it has a couple functions, one being to collectively bargain with employers, namely the state government, but it also takes political positions and advocates for it.
Well, he goes one beyond that. He argues that just being a member of that union and paying dues to that union to represent him in state violates his First Amendment rights.
That's core to his argument, is that they're not separable.
Yes, they're not separable. So the point is that this particular case is the end result of, I would say, probably close to 40 years of lawsuits filed by right-wingers. I don't know what else to call them. That's what they are.
And it's finally made it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and they've lost. They've refiled. They lost. They refiled. And it's like Chomsky said, and he would not be championing them, but they're following his precepts. You just keep persistent. You keep at the game. You never stop. And now they're about, looks like they're going to win, thanks to the quick, slick move that the Republicans did in 2016 to
block the Obama Supreme Court appointee.
And now we're stuck with Neil Gorsuch, Trump appointee. So it looks like they're going to win, and which will force the unions to respond. That is just an example of what Chomsky's talking about. In the civil rights movement, how many years of litigation and marches and demonstrations culminating in the civil rights bill, and did it take to get to that point? And then, you know, it's continual. You just got to keep fighting.
Have you noticed or have you evidenced that people lately, people on the left, that is, seem more engaged outside of elections, or has the current political climate had the opposite effect by turning people off, causing them to eject from participation in the public sphere?
I think right now, Trump's victory in 2016 has had the impact of reviving the left and getting more people involved on a regular basis.
Between elections.
Yes. Now, I get the sense that what's driving them are elections. So like starting with the Women's March, which was the inauguration, right around the same time, the creation of the Indivisible Movement, and then one special congressional election after another, you know, the one.
So keeps the ball rolling.
Keeps the ball rolling. There was Georgia. I think there was one in Idaho, or is it Montana? I guess Montana was the one in Pennsylvania. And we're building toward a November showdown. And then after that, there will be gearing up for the big fight.
I hadn't thought of that as elections occurring all over the country at different times can be like fence posts along the way, as opposed to this every 4 year, every 2 year thing, that there's a swell and then an ebb, that these elections can keep momentum going.
Yeah. That's something I've learned from doing a daily talk show. I'm really aware of things like election, like the special.
There's always
election.
Something going on.
Always something that you got to be aware of to talk about, because someone's going to want to talk about it. The people in Pennsylvania, they work so hard to elect Connor Lamb. And Connor Lamb, by our standards here in Chicago and the quote-unquote progressive movement, would not even be in the movement. You know what I mean? He's a little weak on abortion rights. He loves his guns. You know, I mean.
But it's relative.
It's all relative. Yeah. You know what? He's going to be a vote against the Republicans in the Congress. And you and I have had this conversation before. This is where Rahm and I see eye to eye. You just got to elect somebody there to get your party in, because once the Democrats control the operation, then they run the committees. You set the agenda.
It's strategic.
It's strategic. And Rahm, I don't disagree with everything with Rahm. You know what I mean? I agree with him on that point. So I think that's a tremendous victory for the Democrats. The Republicans, I think I may have shown you this headline before we came on. White House already distancing itself from Pennsylvania. They're spinning. Remember, he wasn't going to spin. He was going to tell it like it is. He's just spinning like the rest of them.
Talking about the president.
President Trump tweeting stupid stuff to try to distance himself. Dude, your neck was on the line. You went to Pennsylvania and gave that dumb ass speech on Friday. I don't know if you saw that one.
I read about it.
Oh my God. It's unbelievable. You schlepped in all your officials. Your son went down there. So they know that is a signal that they're in trouble. They know that. So now how are they going to counter it? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, that's all we have time for. Ben, thanks for taking the time to talk with me today.
You're welcome, David.
Listeners, you know, Ben and I just released our second in a series of audiobooks, and this particular one is on public schools, and it has the last 5 years of our interviews on public schools. You can find it at audible.com or on iTunes, or if you just go on your web and search for Inside Chicago Government Schools. Follow us on Twitter at CHIGOVT. You can email us with any comments via contact at shigov.com. That's CHIGOV. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.